CeraVe Facial Moisturizers with SPF protect skin against damaging UV rays and continuously deliver 3 essential ceramides to help restore skin's protective barrier so it can lock in moisture. Non-greasy, fragrance-free, and won't clog pores? With CeraVe, skin feels hydrated and looks healthy all day. CeraVe Facial Moisturizers with SPF from the number one dermatologist recommended facial moisturizer brand.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Make the most of your me time with sensational hair products from Method. The new range of shampoos and conditioners will leave your hair looking shiny and feeling healthy. From Pure Peace, infused with peony, rose water, and quinoa protein, to Simply Nourish, crafted with coconut, rice milk, and shea butter, and Daily Zen with calming cucumber, seaweed, and green tea. Visit methodproducts.com to unleash your inner shower with Method and reconnect with the best version of yourself.
Yes, everyone, welcome back to Full Time Devils. My name is Stephen Howson. Today, joined by James and John, and we've got loads to talk about today. Promise you, loads. I mean, there's 95 topics we've had to just go. We can't even get into them because we've got all of this to talk about. What the fuck are we talking about?
Well, football's back in some countries, isn't it? That's something to like slightly talk about, even though it's not actually back yet. We can talk about that for the next month and talk about games that are going to be played behind with no people. Something to talk about.
Football behind closed doors is a concept. How weird is that?
Been done before.
I mean, yeah, it has been done before. I mean, obviously, our last football match was behind closed doors. Mm. I was so drunk. I don't remember it, so I don't really have any sort of opinion on how it was. One way or another, I was fucking minging. I think it'll be weird. I think it'll be weird for the players. I think it'll be weird watching a so-called Premier League game where you can hear people coughing.
Mm. But it was weird. Do you remember when Barcelona had that game behind closed doors because of the political situation and you could hear the players like shouting at each other on the pitch and everything, what they were saying? You might actually get a bit more of an insight into what the players are saying and what the managers are saying if the microphones are that close to the pitch.
Yeah, yeah. And it fascinates me, actually, how well the players can hear someone 20 metres away on the pitch. But they can. There's almost like a weird bubble just sort of keeps the pitch clear, even though theoretically the 70,000 people that close screaming at you should just drown out everything you say. But you actually can communicate all right, actually, in the middle of the pitch, which is fucking weird. What's happening, John?
What's going on?
How bad's your hair looking?
It's ridiculous. It's
Do you reckon hat sales have gone through the roof?
I'm sure Clippers sales have gone through the roof. I actually have a set of Clippers myself. I was too scared to touch it. We're going to keep hats on all day if I have to appear on camera.
Yeah, I've ordered some new hats. I've been wearing the same hat for too long. Need a new hat.
Rosso Bianco Nero need to start stocking some more bubble hats. That's the sort of the top red brand at the minute to go to.
Yeah, but a bobble hat in this weather is not a good look. I don't want to be sitting out in my garden wearing a fucking bobble hat and a pair of shorts.
Yeah, but if it's based on like the 1989 United training shirt, then you'll get an extra top 10 top red points from the Red Army.
Because I'll be sweating my fucking face off sitting in the garden wearing it. Actually, bucket hat, maybe.
Talking of them, that's actually a good thing they've done the season tickets for, is it 18 to 22 year olds next season? That I think it's going to be like £200, I think they've said.
Yeah, the stuff that the club's doing in regard to the Red Army, and I know the safe standing sections are potentially going to be totally different, and it's over in J stand, it's nowhere near where the Red Army section is. I like that though. I like the fact that you could potentially, I think this is right, I think there's going to be Red Army section where it is, and then a safe standing section, which will be totally different. Or they might just move the Red Army section back over to where it was.
So in would it be a bit like before when you had different sections of the ground, almost like not against each other, but they'd almost compete to create the most noise between each other?
That would be the best way to generate atmosphere. Mm. You know, your J stand versus Stretford End. You know, J stand gives a song from the Stretford End, and vice versa from J stand. I think that'd be excellent. I think that'd be a real good way to generate it. And then
they still do that at FC. They've got like the sort of main seated section. They've got the terracing behind the goal. And they all have like banter with each other. Like there's sort of there's people behind the goal called people that are like sat down, like plastic fans and that sort of thing. But it's good because it generates atmosphere. Like if you go, I know this might sound controversial, but I've been to some United games on like a Tuesday night in the Europa League, and it's flat. Even with like this the Red Army section, you know, it's just, I think it's a problem with maybe having a certain, there's too many, it's all seated stadiums that I think are part of the problem, but also ticketing, maybe sometimes the football isn't the most exciting, but when you've got terracing, I mean, I was at Wolves away in the FA Cup this season, there was safe standing there, and the atmosphere was really good because everyone was stood up, you could sing more because you're not sat down, and stewards telling people to sit down at a football game is just ridiculous.
Stewards are more of an issue. People do get up and down for different games, and I think that's just natural. I don't think that's ever going to change. There's no way that some fucking Belarusian team on a Thursday night in the fucking opening game of the Europa League is going to have anywhere near the same vibe as a Derby or Liverpool game. So that's obviously it's going to change. There's also a lot of people fucking do dip out. I mean, it's not half the stadium. You're still going to have 70,000 in there, but you know, a couple of thousand people tossing it off for the night. And it's not always just tossing it off. Some people live that far away that the commute to get to Old Trafford for 7 o'clock, if they finish work at half 5 or 6, it ain't fucking doable. So, I mean, my office is in the city centre. It's literally an M1 postcode. If I leave at the wrong time, it can take me an hour and a half to go 2.8 fucking mile to Old Trafford. So, what's it like if you're near Birmingham? Or if you live near Leeds.
Or if you live in Cardiff and have to go to school the next day and get back at 4 in the morning to get 2 hours sleep.
A couple of thousand people doing that or them sorts of journeys, I can empathise with why you'd be like, look, we'll miss it this week, we'll go next week, as sort of an attitude. And the club's made it difficult for those fans to pass tickets on. And they'll do you for touting if you do. Well, away tickets you just can't pass on. It's simple as that.
Well, didn't that kid get banned for like 2 years for like not, didn't even pass his ticket on, he just couldn't go because he was ill?
Yeah, sounds about right, yeah. Yeah, non-attendance, yeah.
Do you think also as well, I mean, we don't have organised supporter sections in the same way that like South America do with Boca Juniors, where they have an organised ultras that will go all the time because it's basically like a cult that they all follow and they'll all sing for 90 minutes.
We've got that, but we don't have anybody that wants to be that guy. And if you try and put your head above the parapet to be that guy, you'll just get fucking abused. It's just not in Manchester United's culture.
What about Pete Boyle? Like,
Pete does what he does in the pubs, but like Pete used to stand near me. He sat down for most of the game. It is what it is. When he was at the bottom of J, in the front of J stand where the singing section's going to be. You're never going to get it like it was in Germany. I mean, I've got a great book here at the minute, which I've only just started, which is Ultra, which is Italian football. But you're never going to get it the way it is in them countries because it's just a totally different culture. Mm. The culture of English football is very much about having a couple of pints.
The annoying thing is you can't take them onto the terraces, which is a stupid thing. It's just a stupid rule now. And I'm so sorry, but I mean, I went to Germany a couple of years ago. I saw Hamburg play Schalke. And I was, 14, 15? I was allowed to drink because the drinking laws of Germany, they don't exist. Like, anyone can drink. And it was great. Everyone was stood there. Everyone was, like, semi-pissed. There was just a bloke stood at the front with a megaphone, getting everyone to sing. There was a whole section, must have been about, back when Old Trafford had terracing at the Stretford End, it was similar to that. It was about 15,000 all stood up, all singing, all the away fans on the opposite end of the ground. There was about 8,000 all stood up, and it was the best atmosphere I've ever experienced at a football game before.
When me and Statman Dave went to RB Leipzig, that's I think it was a seated section. I don't think it was safe standing. I think it was just seats, but you're allowed to drink in your seat, and it was a really good atmosphere.
Haven't they got like strange rules there in Leipzig? Like their fans can't be political, or if they say anything about like LGBT or like gay rights or any of that, they get like banned. They've got really strict rules apparently of all the Red Bull clubs for that sort of thing.
No, not experienced anything in that sense. It's a cracking stadium that they've got built in the bowl of another stadium. It's interesting, you know. I've been to I went to a game Athletic Bilbao against Atletico Madrid. That was a good atmosphere. That's a beautiful stadium. The
good thing is about that is when you walk down that street, it's like a massive coliseum that you can't avoid almost, and everyone's sort of funneled to the same place. That's what I sort of like about Old Trafford. It's like in the middle of almost a massive housing estate. It's this massive, like 76,000 just amphitheatre. And I think that's a bit of a problem when you have these sort of purpose-built arenas. You lose a bit of the character, and City had that when they moved from Main Road to the city of Eastlands Stadium. West Ham have kind of had that in a way, and I think that's sort of a part of modern football in a way, because
those stadiums have been built for different purposes as well. The City Stadium is built for the Commonwealth Games. The West Ham Stadium was built for the Olympics. These aren't stadiums that the club had a hand in designing. And maybe if they did, maybe if they'd been at, you know, like Everton's new one doesn't look like a soulless carbon copy of every other stadium.
Have you seen Brentford's new stadium?
No.
Look shit. Honestly, it looks like every other cardboard box cutout stadium. The seats look like they're from like a under 21 European Championship. They're all like multicoloured. It looks like, compared to Griffin Park, it just looks like every other Football League cardboard box stadium that's next to a retail park with the McDonald's. Yep. Like,
even FC stadium's quite unique. Probably one of the best, if not the best, stadium in non-league football.
They built it themselves, to be fair. Yeah. Like, that's what I like about it. It's almost like it's very Mancunian in the sense that it's an act of defiance almost. You've got this big Glazer takeover, but in the same way over history when Mancunian figures have stood up, whether that's Peterloo, whether that's the suffragette movement, they sort of started their own thing, which I kind of really admire them for.
Yeah, they got a lot of help off the council, and they got a lot of grants from Sport England and Football Foundation and stuff. Because I think FC put about $1.5 million into it. I think it cost seven in total.
The builders went bankrupt halfway through, I think. They had to get new things. It went massively over budget as well.
Fucking hell, nightmares.
They had plans before that for another stadium, which fell through as well.
Yeah, that was that the 10-acre lane one?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been several proposed sites, I think, in Manchester for different sorts of stadiums and stuff like that. And, you know, it is what it is. I would hate to see United ever leave Old Trafford, but it definitely needs a baby wipe around some of the stanchions. Yeah.
You can look at all the acres around the stadium that they just don't use for anything. I mean, the most recent developments around Old Trafford is the University of 92, which isn't really Old Trafford. It's sort of on the way in between the cricket ground and the football stadium. It's the hotel football. But all the other acres, I mean, there's car parks there that are just not really car parks. They're just sort of like wasteland. There's that random Cumo Tires pitch that's been locked up for like 6 months. It's all a bit like random around the stadium.
Yeah, there's... there's a lot. If you go on Google Earth and look at Old Trafford, there's a fucking obscene amount of car park space around the back, which I don't even know how much that gets used on match day. I imagine a large proportion of it, but a lot of it's to do with the shipping businesses that are at the back of it. I'd love them to build a little stadium like City have got on that ground. But, you know, for having 8 years of academy players, you know, and one of the best stadiums in world football, or at least one of the most iconic. Our academy play at fucking Lee.
And it's a pain to get to as well.
It's easier to get to fucking Paris than Lee, I reckon.
Why don't they play at Alfie anymore?
It's not a good-looking stadium, to be honest. Mm. Probably a lot to do with that. Altrincham's dark. And whether it's a brilliant summer or if it's in the depths of winter, Altrincham's dark. Like, there's no... This is a weird thing to pick up on, but... I mean, I picked up on it. It's dark in the stand. Like, you don't notice how light it is in the stand at most places until you go to somewhere where there's no fucking light whatsoever, and it's literally pitch black. There's just no lights. So a night game, you're just sitting in the dark. It's weird.
Yeah, but you probably get more there because obviously, like, it's easier to get to, and I think it's a nicer stadium than Leeds Sports Village is. I think it's got more to it.
It's got more character because it's old, but... I don't know. Maybe I've never been in the changing rooms. Maybe the changing rooms facilities aren't great. Maybe they want to keep the manager away from you know, all the public and stuff. You can't do that at Altrincham. I was at Altrincham. I was sat next to Tuan Zabi, actually, for an FA Youth Cup game that we played in. I think Roshan and Timbo was at centre-half. I think Angel Gomez came on at like 14 or 15. Rashford played. Charlie Scott played. It was like quite a recognisable team. And Lou Van Gaal come and sat on the seat in front of us with Giggs and Bobby Charlton. And you think, okay, it's cool, but I think, especially like as soon as Louis went and Jose came in, they want that separation. All right, Jose never went and watched the fucking academy. I think he went once. But they do want that sort of separation, don't they?
Well, that's what the article I was telling you last week about in The Athletic was about when the youth players were saying when Jose came in, the difference was in the canteen, Van Gaal spoke to them all the time. He knew them by their first names. But Mourinho, he didn't actually know the names of like most of the academy players and never really spoke to them.
Yeah, there's a couple of lads that aren't at the club anymore that I know that they'd come and hang out and stuff in the office and chatting to them. They were like, there was some of them that was on the cusp of a debut and some actually got a debut and they was like, I don't know my name. And I said, like, oh, did you say I've seen you in first team training? How's it going? And they'd be like, it's only because he was short numbers. Like, he's not thinking of bringing us in. He doesn't know my fucking name.
Well, he has that sort of us versus their mentality, and it can work for him, but it can also work against him. I mean, when he was manager of Real Madrid, he had this sort of weird thing where he made Real Madrid players hate Barcelona players, even though most of them had been with each other and won the World Cup together in Spain. But he'd made this like weird opposition thing to make the Real Madrid players hate Barcelona players, even though they were like mates with each other. It didn't work, so he got sacked.
He's mental, isn't he? Mm. John, you all right?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm actually quite enjoying because, you know, that local conversations that you guys have. I'm not local, so it's actually very interesting, and I'm learning a lot just hearing from you guys.
Should be dick. So you sent me this before, James. Let me find it. So yeah. Luke Shaw's been talking about how Aaron Maguire's finding people for not turning up to team meetings. What do you think about that, John?
I looked at that and I thought that was very interesting. I think it's modern age now where you kind of have that leeway and that flexibility. Of course, back in the day, if the manager says, all right, you know, we're going to go grab dinner together, you're all there. But nowadays with the player power, the shift in the player power rather, you know, maybe they had the option of just kind of hanging out, be like, I'd rather spend time with my homies. I'd rather go home. I'd rather chill with the family, whatever. I think that kind of rule being implemented is just inevitable. You have to have something like that. And I agree with it. I think we need something like that. If you need to show up, if you think you're too much of a cool cat, cause you know, you got to go for some sort of club. Now you got to go dinner. And you're like, I got better things to do than go out and hang out with my colleagues. It's a different situation. You know, it's like you have to go, you have to be able to connect with your colleagues on a different level now more so than ever. And something like that. The fine thing might seem a bit aggressive at first, but I think it's necessary and required, especially, you know, times like this.
It sounds like these team meetings aren't weekly. So it's not like you have to come on the piss with us every week. It sounds like these are, by the sounds of it, quarterly-ish.
That's exactly what I think.
Which is fine. Like, yeah, we're doing this and we're doing it as a team. And if that's what the captain says and he's got the authority to do that, given by the manager, fucking get in it. Otherwise, yeah, you're getting fined. There's all sorts of mad fines in a club. It's not those official sort of fines, like you'll get docked 2 wages like you might see on like computer games and things like that. This is going to be like small fines.
Doing an MUTV interview and slagging the whole team off, allegedly. That sort of thing.
We used to have a similar thing when I was in the army, which was if you ended up in a paper or if you ended up in any of like, you know, Soldier magazine or your name or picture ended up anywhere, you got fined. Not for a security reason. It's just a piss take reason. Even if you ended up in like the local flyer, you know, about your local camp or something like that, and you had to get a crate in, and a crate was 12 beers. So you get crated for your name being in anything. And I imagine it's like that. You know, it's not like you now owe me a grand, although to a footballer that might be the equivalent of 12 beers. I don't know.
It's like that the anecdote Cantona says about the players. They went into that kitty for those fans thing, and Nicky Button, I think it was Paul Scholes or someone, put some money in. Cantona won like 12 grand, and he shared it in half between Button and Scholes, I think it was, as a, like a... like for putting the risk in of putting the money in that they probably couldn't afford at the time. So that sort of thing.
Yeah, it was some sort of lottery thing. Mm. And they put the, I think the first team players put in their win bonus, which is obviously smaller than their wage, but because of how much them lads was on at the time, they had to put their whole wage in. And when Cantona won it, he'd give it them to say, yeah, it meant more what they would. I can't remember what it was.
It was like, I think it's 12 grand, I think. So I was reading.
No, I can't remember what it was for. Was it? It might have been like an FA Cup win bonus or something.
No, it might have been fines or something. I was reading it in. I read Keane's other book last week about his sort of time in management and the sort of last few years at United. It's quite interesting actually compared to the sort of first book he did. I mean, it's a shame really that it didn't quite work out for him in management, because I think if he could sort of control his anger a bit more, I think it'd be really good, because he's worked under obviously Clough and Fergie, and he's got that sort of. He's very good at motivating players to get the best out of them.
Oh, here you go. One morning, Bruce arrived in the dressing room with a cheque for 15 grand. The team squad had contributed to some video or other, and this was the payment that was meant to be split between the squad. Struggling to work out who was owed what, we decided on a majority vote, hold a draw, winner takes all. The option of taking your cut, about 800 quid, was available. So if you wanted your cut, you could just take your cut, or you can throw it in and see if you can win the lot. The younger lads, that was a couple of weeks' wages at the time, and they wanted the money. Only Scholes and Nicky Butt opted to play for the pot, which was about 12 grand after those who wanted to take it out took it out. Cantona's name came out of the hat. He got the cheque. Next morning, Cantona arrived with two cheques for Nicky and Paul, and he, you know, he divvied the money up between them. And he said he loved that both of them taking a risk despite need the money being his to keep. So he liked it. There you go.
You've met Eric before for an interview. Does
fucking
he have,
cuddled him like a long lost relative.
Does he have that sort
friend?
Of like aura about him when you sort of meet him? You sort of go, yeah. Fucking hell, that's Eric Cantona. Just sort of, yeah. Do you shoot yourself?
Yeah, he's the only one. He's the only one I'd ever been. I'd be nervous with Keane for a different reason, and I'd be excited for Sir Alex. But Cantona's my reason that I love football. That reason that I fell deeply in love with it. United was just something that I did with my dad until I saw Cantona play. And once I saw Cantona play, I fell in love with it.
It's that whole character. I don't think we're ever going to see that in football. The sort of the arrogance, the poetry, the sort of misdemeanor he has about himself. It's kind of incredible.
You didn't see it in football then, to be honest. He was batshit crazy compared to everybody else at the time. He retired at 30. Well, think how many players play on past.
I was reading Filippo Clay's book about Cantona, who's like met him loads of times. According to him, he actually died when he retired from football. That's what Cantona said to him when he left United. According to Cantona, apparently he's officially dead because he stopped playing football.
Wow. Well, I think it was United We Stand years ago did something, and it was Cantona had said something about falling in love with his wife, and it was poetic as fuck. If someone had said Shakespeare written it, or some fucking French Resistance sort of era, Renaissance era sort of guy had written it, you'd have gone, yeah, fair enough. Not a footballer. And in United We Stand, it had just said, can't quite imagine Phil Jones coming out with them sort of words. And I'm not going to ad-lib it. It was mad. Like, you just wouldn't see a footballer saying, you know, he painted in his spare time.
He's into all like politics as well, isn't he? I mean, I could listen to him for 3 hours just talk about socialism and his grandparents fleeing from Catalonia and that sort of thing. Yeah. He's got a really interesting background as well.
When he was at the Lowry a couple of years ago, we met him that night because I took a gamble that people from outside of Manchester assume the Lowry Hotel and the Lowry Theatre are right next to each other, and they're not. They're a couple of miles apart. They're just named after the same bloke. But I imagine that if you book a guest that's doing a show at the Lowry Theatre, you go, I'll book him a room at the Lowry Hotel. Lowry's also the five-star, or I think it might be four-star, hotel in town.
Although it's United players used to meet, was it?
Yeah, they still do, yeah.
Mm, yeah.
So I took a gamble and was like, let's just go and have a pint in the bar. I was with my dad. My dad went home, actually. I was with my auntie, with Adam, and we just went and sat in the hotel and had a pint. As we're waiting there, Jose comes in. but it was the night Claudio Ranieri had been sacked, so he was in a right mood.
Was that where he lived for a bit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Cantona came in. Wow. So we took a bit of a gamble. We were expecting that we were going to see him there. But that night, the show that he did, the one-man show, Cantona was getting into some amazing shit. Like, I would love to do a podcast with him because I think out of the love and respect I've got for the guy, I would just give him every little bit of a breadcrumb that he wanted and then just watch him go off down a path, whatever he was talking about. He started talking about philosophy. He was talking about how UEFA have got a duty to make sure people under 21 are watching football matches. He was talking about when he looks at football matches, he sees old men. He doesn't see young people. And for football to carry on and live, you've got to have young people going to the match and being interested in it. And, you know, there needs to be a subsidy, whether it's in prize money or blah, 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 blah. And he goes, he's going off down this, honestly, riveting monologue. And a guy's like, the guy that was conducting his like one-man show went, yeah. So tell us about Selhurst Park. And you're like, fuck off. What? Like, you've just got one of the most out-of-the-box minds talking about this amazing thing in football. And now you want to just bring him back to, I remember when you kicked that guy, remember that day? Like,
did you listen to the MUTV podcast he did with Homewood and I think it was David May as well that he did, and what I love about him is just these like really obscure metaphors that only he could understand. He doesn't tell anyone about what he actually is saying. So like when he did that UEFA ceremony, he just went off randomly on for like 5 minutes about this like Shakespeare thing that only he understood, and everyone was sort of like confused. But when someone actually sort of decipted what he said, it was like, actually, yeah, it makes quite a bit of sense what he's saying.
He's a very intelligent guy. I don't think you can come out with after shit he comes out with. And even, I don't even think you can start to even understand some of the metaphors he comes out with if you're not fucking clever. So a lot of them go right over my head.
Like, he had the British press on strings really after the whole Selhurst Park thing. Only he could come out and say the seagulls follow the trawler thing after that and then just look so effortless whilst doing it. It's credit to him really that he can do that sort of thing and be so calm and cool after basically just being vilified by the English press for the past 6 months.
Cantona was a really interesting case study in the way he was treated, the way Roy Keane was treated, because they both had off the field issues and on the field issues, and the way Paul Gascoigne and Alan Shearer were treated was very interesting. And I thought it was an English thing, and then David Beckham got sent off, and you're like, no, this isn't an English thing, this is a United thing. You know, Paul Gascoigne could never do any wrong, despite doing a fucking lot wrong all the time off the pitch. He's got this persona of being loved and being vulnerable that the press have put out there. Alan Shearer nearly took Neil Lennon's head fucking clean off, got away with murder. Well, if you're an England player at the time, like the FA seems to protect you, and John Terry and Steven Gerrard, massive examples of that, except if you play for United.
A lot of people did worse fouls than Cantona did in terms of his kick and didn't get really anything for it. I mean, if you look at, I forgot his name, but the French keeper that basically put a German player into a coma during the World Cup, and like the referee just played on, didn't even book him.
That was the 70s, I think.
Look at Trippier the other month. He got nothing for going into the crowd and basically like shouting at that guy.
Supposedly that had fisticuffs as well. There were supposedly punches thrown with that as well. I don't see the difference between what he did and what Cantona did, because the guy was further in the stand. Like, there's no difference. If you enter the stand, I'm not allowed on the pitch. Well, that means you're not allowed in the crowd, right? Surely that's what it fucking means. It can't mean something else. Fuck it. Anything else you want to talk about, fellas?
Good book, that, if anyone hasn't read it. Cantona, the Rebel Who Would Be King, is available now at all good bookshops and amazon.co.uk.
Have you been reading any books in lockdown, lads?
Just then, I read Keane's other book, his other autobiography, about his time at management and how he was at Sunderland and Ipswich. And it's interesting to see how he sort of coped with players and that sort of thing.
You mean he didn't? Yeah. He's a fucking lunatic.
That's the problem. I mean, if he could control his anger a bit more, he'd be a great manager, because he's worked with Clough, he's worked with Fergie, and he's really good at motivating players. But then he just goes too far. That's the issue with him.
Yeah, I'm gonna give you all some recommended reading. Uncle Stevie's recommended reading. John, you've been doing any reading?
Unfortunately, no, because most of the books that I had intended to read, I left at my parents' place, and then I moved out here, and then I couldn't visit again because of COVID.
Right, get on Amazon, because there's fucking shitloads of good books out there. So Ultras, this is what I'm currently going to every day at the moment. I like it. That's a good one. FC St. Pauli, pirates, punks, and politics. That's interesting. When I went to Hamburg, St. Pauli weren't playing there, and I didn't get a chance to go watch a game there. But their souvenir shops around town are there are like a weird Northern Quarter vibe about them. Very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the what's it called? I can't believe I don't know what it's called because I've been there. But the Red Light District in Hamburg is very very similar feel to the Northern Quarter in Manchester. I forgot what it's forgot what it's called.
Brian Clough. I would urge anyone that grew up in a Premier League era to go read about what Brian Clough did to take a team from the second tier into the first tier to win the league, then a European Cup, then retain a European Cup, and he did it all for about $100,000 or something. Like,
did you have you read the book Through the Eyes of a Journalist that was covering Clough at the time for about 25 years, and then like fell out with him at the end? So it's a very different perspective on it. It's really good.
Clough was low-key genius. He understood that recruitment was the most important thing when it came to building a football team. And he had a really interesting phrase. As he's shaking your hand, John, welcome to Nottingham Forest. You're going to be a good lad here. You're going to enjoy it. The second I find a player better than you, you're out the fucking door. Welcome. That's in the middle of his welcome speech. Oh, by the way, I will replace you rapid. And he did. I might sign you for $30,000. As soon as Liverpool come calling with $200,000, you're gone and I'll get another one in. And that's what he did. And he managed to keep the team going financially by flipping players for a profit and unearthing some absolute fucking gems. And then I definitely recommend this to anyone who's interested in the business side of football. Changing the conversation, 1, 2, and 3. They're almost like blog posts. They're all like little articles. So there's not big, long chapters. You can literally just dip in, read one page, and you've read the entire, or maybe 2 pages, they're probably about 2 pages long each one, about a million different ideas, and a lot of them are evidence-supported stuff in football and about football performance and the way it's run and all that lot. And they're about £6 on Amazon. Changing the Conversation by 21st Club. Go fucking check those out. They're absolutely...
Have you got over Soconomics now?
No. I mean...
You always go to when looking at the whenever anyone criticizes
this people. Right, this should be anyone who wants to talk about football needs to have read this book or shut the fuck up until they have read this book, because it's fascinating. And because I was that impressed with that book, Simon Cooper and Stefan Szymanski, I bought this one as well. Pretty much, yeah. it's like the add-on to Soconomics, but I've not started this one yet. So, yeah, read this fucking book. If you've not read this book, why not? I don't know how many fucking times I need to tell you, go read this book. There's some incredible stuff in here in terms of, like, transfer spend doesn't equate to or doesn't correlate to league performance. The thing that generally correlates to league performance more is wages spent, how unsustainable some of the football stuff is, how certain clubs are different, set up in different ways to achieve what they achieve or not what they achieve. It's got about how fucking penalties work, and how teams have won penalty shootouts using maths. Like, it's insane. There's so much in this book that covers so many different things. One of the most fascinating things is how there has been no democratic capital cities have won a European Cup.
London.
It was when it was written.
All right.
And I think the reason behind that was the oligarch thing. There was something in the oligarch thing. But no, no democratic capital cities have got a thing. I can't remember the fucking reasoning behind it. It was like, if you go to Paris, no. Madrid... It isn't a democratic capital city. Rome hasn't got one. Vienna hasn't got one. Berlin hasn't got one. If you go through, it goes through it all. And it says, like, generally, the better football teams are working-class industrial cities. That's what Porto, Munich.
Hamburg.
Manchester. Liverpool. Hamburg. Yeah. Like, it's a like Marseille. Marseille was a traditional big power in French football prior to oligarchies. And it said there's just something in democratic capital cities have just got a little bit more to do in them. And football comes from that working class culture. You know, even the likes of Aberdeen, Glasgow. Yo, why is it Glasgow?
It's a bit like why Girona in Spain that have had loads of money pumped into. I think they're affiliated to City somehow. Yeah. They're not gathering the sort of attendances and attention towards them because the place is just too nice. The beach is like 2 minutes down the road. The houses are too expensive. There's just not that grit about it in the same way that other sort of northern European cities like Copenhagen, like Manchester, like Aberdeen have that sort of. I don't want to say like I don't want to say they're shitholes, but they've certainly got that sort of, you know, gritness about them. They're sort of not, they've not quite been gentrified in the same way that other major cities have.
No, apart from one that's been born to the son of a great athlete, has there ever been, you know, top level athletes that have come from like unbelievable wealth? You know, Bill Gates' kids aren't going to the Olympics, are they? You know, or are going to be a world champion boxer. It just doesn't happen. Sport is the working class pastime and it's the working class gateway out of wherever the fuck you live.
Right, and that's what it's always been. Failed.
Did he fail? Played for Barcelona and Man United?
Yeah, but compared to... I know it's really hard to compare to his dad, but I mean, his dad won... Well,
but don't compare him to his dad.
Yeah,
compare him to the average person.
It's fair enough.
It's not fair to compare him to...
Yeah, it's not.
If you're not as good as Johan Cruyff, you didn't have a good career. Fucking hell. There's been about four people that have had a good career ever.
Yeah.
See, like, you know, people will talk about...
Joel Cantona.
I don't even know if he played professional football.
Stockport, two games.
Did he? Yeah. I'm just trying to think of any, like, generic Premier League winner that United had. Like, Darren Gibson. We go, oh, he was shit. Was he? Represented his country, played for United, played for Everton. Like
he didn't fully his potential though. I mean, he was scoring against Bayern Munich in the Champions League, and 9 years later, he was getting done for drunk driving at a club in League One. I mean,
well, ultimately, when you look at people's careers, you can't just say unless you was world class, you didn't have a good career because there's been some phenomenal careers that have happened outside of that. And even if you played down the leagues, the fact that you could make a living into your 30s playing professional sport, that's the fucking dream. I don't give a fuck if you played for Colchester and fucking Walsall. Well fucking done. You know, there was a lad I went to school with who ended up playing for Oldham. What a fucking career at the end of the day. You are the 1% of the 1%. And then the Premier League players and the internationals, they're the 1% of the 1% of the 1%. You think how many fuckers are playing football across the fucking globe for you to get a career in one of the top five leagues in the world and be playing and getting paid to do so is insane. Because think how mad this is. Football's one of the most well-rewarded financially sports that are out there. And so many people would do it for free. There's a weird dichotomy about that.
That's kind of linking into what I was saying the other week about, I mean, the top 1% of footballers might be okay out of this situation, but if you go further down the pyramid, I mean, the players in League One, League Two, I mean, if football doesn't come back in 3-4 months' time, they're going to be in, like, serious trouble.
Did you reckon they need, like, 200 million to bail out non-league? Or something like that? I might have got them numbers wrong. You're like... Who the fuck has got that? I think you might see a massive restructuring of football after this. I'd be surprised if less than 10 clubs go bump.
Do you think there's too many teams in the Football League anyway, as it is in terms of, I mean, how in terms of they make money? I mean, there's 92 clubs in the English football pyramid and only about 16, 17 of those turn a profit every year.
It was only two at one point. It was United and Arsenal a few years ago. John, how many professional football teams is there in New York? Red Bulls and City?
Just the two. But the funny thing is, Red Bulls aren't even stationed in New York.
Are they in Jersey?
Yeah, they're in New Jersey, aren't they? Yeah.
Okay, so New York City has got one professional team.
Yeah,
How many college teams?
I believe there are a few colleges, but they all play in different divisions. So I think NYU plays in D2 for some of the sports. Columbia plays in D1 for some of the sports. Like they're just all spread out.
Are the Cosmos semi-professional?
Cosmos are no longer relevant, I think. Oh, they still
play in
the island.
They're playing the MISL now because the NASL, the relaunched version of that, went bankrupt.
That's correct. Yeah.
So they didn't play for a couple of seasons. But now, if it wasn't for this, they would be playing in the MISL, which is the same league that has Brooklyn Italians. I think there's a couple of other local New York sides to play in it as well.
Yeah, I mean, Cosmos have been, they've been in and out for quite some time due to financial struggles and whatnot. But yeah, you're right. That's correct. They have been recently jumping back in.
Just give me a rough estimate then. How many college teams that are doing, let's say more than 1,000 people go watch them?
Probably in New York, it's not that much. Maybe one or two tops. I mean, New York sports, like, you know, you guys were talking about that whole industry, working class cities and whatnot. New York is interesting because New York City is New York City, and yet we have one of the worst sporting reputations on the planet. I mean, you look at basketball, you look at,
the Yankees are pretty well known. I mean, I'm not into my baseball, but they're one of the only baseball teams that I've heard of.
Right.
Are the Rangers?
I'm talking about with respect to the current sort of level of success. Of course, we have the big names like the Yankees, the Rangers, you know, like even Cosmos at a certain point was a big
Giants
name.
Have won Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, but the Knicks are pretty well known as well.
You look at right now, they're doing horrible. The Knicks are the laughing stock of the NBA currently. They are so bad. They've been they're just getting torn apart. I mean, as a Knicks fan myself, it's horrible to see. I mean,
the point I was trying to make, which is why I was asking. Because otherwise I'm going to forget, because my memory is well shit at a minute. Right. So there's probably, let's say, three teams that get maybe more than 1,000 people that go and bother watching them in New York City. How many people live in New York City?
Like 90 million, I think.
Really?
Or something like that. Yeah, huge, huge number.
Is that the state or the city?
Might be the state. I'm not sure. I don't remember now.
Holy shit. Okay, so that's more people.
It's more people in the UK. 90 million, that.
We've got a guest. Say hi. All
right.
Yeah, sorry. Hi. 19 million was the state. I think it's 8 million in New York City.
Okay. So that's a lot of people. In the UK, which is, or let's just say in England, which I think is about 50, 60 million people, which is only what, like 3-4 times what you say New York is, there's 92 professional clubs. And then there's a, like a 7-step pyramid that's underneath that. Every shitty little community has got a football team. Some of them have got, like, if you just go, like, City fans like to say, there's only one club in Manchester. For starters, that's so fucking wrong, I don't even know where to start. But there's also, you know, you go all the way down to your Abbey Hay, your Charlton and West Didsbury, FC United, and then you've got your Drolls. Tameside alone, where I live, which is a suburb of the east side of Manchester, you've got Hyde, Glossop, Mosley, Drolsden. Ashton alone's got Ashton Albion, Ashton United, yeah. Curzon United, Curzon Ashton. There's so many fucking football teams around here. It's actually a piss take. And I wouldn't ever suggest, why don't you just fuck off like 9 of these teams and create, well, like a Tameside United or something like that, because then you could have probably one club in this tiny, let's be honest, tiny little suburb, probably get like 12, 13, 14,000 fans.
That's what happened with Rushden Diamonds. There was two local non-league sides, Earthlington Borough or something, and Rushden Town. And the owner of Dr. Martin's went, right, you two are merging together. I'm going to pump shitloads of money into you. We're going to go into League One and then going to build you a massive multi-purpose 7,000-seat stadium. Yeah. And then what happened was Dr. Martin's almost went bankrupt, had to move to Asia and everything, and they folded like 6 years later. It was like crazy. Only existed for like 16 years.
Is there too many teams in England? Probably. I mean, when you look at the spread of professional sports in other countries, there's nowhere that's got the... I mean, if you look at the Spanish Football League pyramid, it's like 4 levels. You can go 22 levels.
There's a lot of regional leagues within those levels. I mean, if you look at Segunda B, for example, there's something crazy like 30 divisions within that one section.
Yeah, but they're like 6 teams each.
Mm.
There's 22 levels of around 12 to 20 teams, or even sometimes up to 24. There's so many fucking clubs in England. It's outrageous. Manchester's the second most densely populated footballing city in the world. Do you know which the number one is?
Is it Berlin?
I would have thought London, because at least at the professional level there's loads, and then obviously there's a million different leagues, but supposedly, but I think there's that many people there that it thins it out a little bit.
Mm.
Per capita, Buenos Aires is the most densely populated football city in the world. And Manchester second.
River Plate, Boca Juniors. Is it Argentinos Juniors as well?
Can you? I have no idea. No. But can you imagine how many amateur football teams there must be in Buenos Aires as well?
The difference between the two stadiums, between La Bombonera and Rivers Grande, which I should know the name of that I've forgotten, it's crazy. It's like literally you've got like two massive housing estates. And they're like within like, I think it's like 12 metres of each other.
Well, one's the posh side, one's the working class side, isn't it?
Well, River Plate are known as Los Millonarios because of the sort of rich, alleged rich upbringing they've got, in the same way that Sevilla and Betis have that same sort of argument. But it's based off an argument that's about 400, 500 years old. So it's a bit out of date, to be honest.
Oh, fuck it. Right. I'm going to leave it there. But cheers to you guys.
What about one of the week? We've got to do that.
Do we?
Well, Jay said so.
Don't know. Things have to happen for us to be Wally of the Week, don't they? Mm. Oh, Di Maria's misses.
Yeah.
Yourself. There we go. That's a fucking hell of a Wally of the Week.
Go fuck yourself, dick. Honestly.
Are you only going to ever give praise to Ashley Young for crashing Di Maria into the advertising hoardings at United? Is that the one time you're going to praise him?
Honestly, I mean, how bitter does she have to fucking be? Coming out, there was so much venom in what she was saying as well. They lived in Alderley Edge. Don't fucking tell me that was like a shithole. Because guess what? It ain't. You fucking helmet.
I reckon he probably just tried to like jib a tram once and he got caught at the other end. And now he's got like a bitter feeling towards it.
Paris has got some seriously iconic buildings. But it's a fucking shithole.
Yeah.
You're telling me that living in Paris is fucking all sunshine and rainbows. And I'm not pretending Manchester is either, but like, fucking hell. Right, cheers for watching. Make sure to subscribe. Get any of your questions, comments, any of that shit in the description, in the comments even below. And we'll see you guys in the next one. Laters.
So.
Podcast Network.